I'm Doc Issues from Capes on the Couch, a show that examines the mental health issues of comic book characters, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other amazing geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again we are here talking to a creator about their cool stuff. This time we kind of, sort of, are looking at a project we've looked at before, but we're looking at it from a couple different angles this time. Because today I have Tyler Ruff here to talk about the Atonement Bell, this time for specifically the Red 5 Comics release, and not for a Kickstarter like when I talked to Jim Ousley about it before. So Tyler, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I am excited that I get to hear another side of this story. A little disappointed that the technology failed Jim, but I guess it's good that he trusts both of us to make a good episode out of this.
Yeah, let's try to make him proud.
I mean, we either will or we won't. Like, I don't think there's any in between there for this.
Well, we'll do what we can do.
So, what is your elevator pitch for the Atonement Bell?
The Atonement Bell is about a family who gets mixed up in a centuries-old beef with a witch coven and a Catholic church. And it's a holiday story, a ghost story. It takes place around Christmas, and it's just kind of about the ties between family and what lengths people will go to protect that family. It's a neat story, and I'm happy to be doing the artwork for it.
How did you get sucked into working on this one?
So ordinarily, I most of the time spend my time working on my indie comic series, The Unforgiven. I write and illustrate and color and do every aspect of that. But Jim had this book, The Atonement Bell, that he'd written, and he wanted to put that out. And he, like you said before, he had a Kickstarter. And there was another artist attached to the project that didn't pan out, and we had met at a Free Comic Book Day event, and he asked if when that artist backed out, if I'd want to do the art for it. And this is one of my first, like, actually, you know, published works. The Unforgiven is entirely self-published, so this is my first work through a publisher like Red 5 that'll be, you know, on comic shelves and distributed through Diamond in that way. So not an indie book by any means. And it's been an interesting, different experience than my usual creative endeavors. So I do all the artwork for it, the pencils and inks. Ben Sawyer does the colors, Ed Dukeshire does the lettering, and Jason Green was the editor on the book, and then, of course, Jim wrote it.
It's interesting to me that you say this isn't an indie book. Like, I guess technically that is super, like, letter of the definition true, but I also hear everybody talking about basically any publisher that isn't Marvel and DC. Image is kind of slipping in there too these days, but like anything else, mm-hmm. people are considering an indie book.
Yeah, and I guess that's true. It's more indie than any of those, definitely. Just less indie than what I'm used to with self-publishing, because that's about as indie as you can get.
What kind of differences have you found getting this one out through Red 5 versus your experience with purely by yourself 100% indie publishing?
Well, it's nice because I don't have to do any of the setting up any events like this. Jim does all that. I do everything myself on The Unforgiven, so having a team to work with is nice to have other people to fall back on for some of the work, because it's kind of a monster to do every aspect of it yourself, and pretty exhausting. So that's, being part of a collaborative team is definitely a change of pace. But then also, of course, deadlines. I make all my own deadlines on my own books, and having deadlines through a publisher that I have to meet means I can't take as casual of a stroll through the book as maybe my creative process is used to.
So how long have you guys been working on this one, and how far into the story have you actually finished? At least your part of it.
I started developing the character designs and the storyboards for the first issue in late November, early December of 2021. And I didn't start actually creating the artwork for the series until the last week or so of December 2021. So been working on it since then, and I am about one issue away from finishing it up. So I'm in the home stretch, and got like 25% of the thing left. So working on the storyboards for that last issue now, and gonna be starting artwork on that soon.
What challenges have you really come up with doing this as a traditionally published thing after having already put it out as a Kickstarter?
Well, I'm not sure what all went into the Kickstarter aspect of it. I didn't have any involvement with the Kickstarter part of it, so all of my experience has been just doing all the pencils and the inks and that, and that's challenging enough in and of itself. I can only keep pace with about a page of pencils a day, and inks I can do several pages worth in a day. But I do also have the Unforgiven to be working on and splitting my time with that, and then also the day job that pays the bills and keeps a roof over my head, as many comics artists have to balance.
So basically you have the easy part, which is probably the first time that can be legitimately said to an artist.
I wouldn't necessarily call this the easy part. It's definitely the most labor intensive and time consuming part of it. It takes the most time to get this part of it out until I can get these pages turned around for colors and letters and everything. So everybody's waiting on my glacial pace to get through this thing.
Oh, I just meant that you don't have to do the marketing and set up interviews and do all the publishing fulfillment thing end of it.
Oh, sure. I'm blessed with not having to do the PR for sure. I like having conversations about it, definitely, but the social media aspect, I could do without. I could live without social media, gladly, happily.
It is definitely a blessing and a curse with this kind of thing, with podcasting and everything like that. Like, you've got to be available-ish for the fans who want to see things, but you also need to get your stuff done.
Yeah, definitely. Because without people reading this, without fans of it, I mean, what are we doing this for? I'm not just making stuff to be in a vacuum. I want people to read it and enjoy it and connect with readers and connect with, other creators and things like that. It is a balancing act, because you don't want to shut yourself off from all that. And that's the part that makes it is being able to connect with people, connect with readers, connect with other creators. But you, again, like you said, you do have to get your work done. And with the way algorithms and things are these days, trying to figure out just how to get your work seen, that's a huge challenge. You can make all kinds of posts, you can make all kinds of, tweets and blogs and Facebook posts and Instagram posts and TikToks, and it's a crapshoot as to whether or not you're going to get 5 or 500 people see them. And you hope for 500, obviously, but that doesn't always translate to readers. It doesn't always translate to interest. So I feel where the most connection happens is in person, at events, at actual, you know, signings and tables and cons, actually getting to talk face-to-face with people about the work and getting to connect with people through the work and in person that way.
What kind of reactions have you gotten from people at those face-to-face events when they see this?
Well, since this one's not out yet, I haven't gotten to I haven't gotten that blessing yet, but I'm looking forward to talking with people about it for sure. It comes out November 9th, so that'll be the first opportunity I have to actually talk with readers about it, and I'm really looking forward to that.
You haven't snuck in anything about it to them, even if you didn't have a physical thing to show them?
I've brought my original artwork to show off, and people seem to dig that. So, you know, that's satisfying and gratifying to have people respond to it.
I know for me, when Jim showed me the Kickstarter release art, at least what he was willing to show me back at that time when we recorded that episode, I was pretty blown away with this. Like, I am definitely excited to have both copies here in the house. One, because I'm going to get to compare what's in the Kickstarter version versus what's in the Red 5 version. Two, because I can leave one in each bathroom in the house and I'll have bathroom ready no matter what.
Yeah, I enjoyed the art that was those being produced for it before. Ray Estrada. I enjoyed the art that he was doing for it. But, you know, I'm obviously happy to have had this opportunity in his place.
What challenges did you have coming in and taking over for somebody like that?
Well, I had to start from scratch. I didn't look at any of the character designs or anything like that. I didn't want to be influenced by anything that came before. I wanted to start from the ground floor and do my own thing with it. So that's what I did. And so that set me back, because obviously they started with the Kickstarter way back in July. So I was, you know, quite a few months down already with the timelines, trying to meet deadlines. But I've done my best to catch up, and, you know, I'll have this one done by the end of the year, and I'm looking forward to seeing the finished work.
I have heard from many artists, and I don't know if this is just a trope or not, but I've heard that horses are a horrible thing to draw, and you and all of your wisdom have many, many horses just in the preview pages that I've seen. So does that mean you are very confident in your abilities, or that you're completely insane?
Well, to be honest, when I saw that script and all the horses that were going to be in it, you're not wrong. I was like, oh boy, I hope I can pull this off. So I got, I actually picked up some figurines that I could use to pose, to get my anatomy right for the horses, because it's obviously wildly different than human anatomy, which is what I'm most used to drawing. So I wanted a live visual reference as true to life as I could get. Not being a rancher myself, I just picked up some toys to use for photo reference. And, you know, I think I pulled it off.
I'm definitely not a horse expert, because I think they're big and scary, and their big teeth exist to grind your bones. But they definitely look like horses to me. And I mean that in the best way possible, because I don't have the ability to go nitpick anything on a horse.
Well, as long as it's convincing, that's all I need. St. Louis is a gorgeous city with lots of gorgeous architecture, lots of amazing food, though you don't see that depicted in the book. And I really wanted to make sure that St. Louis's best side was featured. I feel like people are often one or the other, Chicago or St. Louis. You know, there's kind of a I wouldn't say unspoken competition between the two cities, but there's a generally, you know, there's a rivalry there. And I'm not a sports person, but there's, I know a sports, like a long-standing sports rivalry between the two cities. But I feel like Chicago is often the one that people default to, and St. Louis kind of gets overlooked. So I wanted to really make sure this area was, you know, shown in the best light and shown authentically. When I was drawing it, I wanted to, you know, if someone was driving down a specific street, then the street that they turn onto is going to be the next street. Like if someone were driving down the road, they would, you know, be able to get to the place just based on my drawings of it. I wanted people who lived here to have the authenticity of knowing, like, oh yeah, that's how that is in real life. Not, you know, oh well, you can't get there from here. Like that's not where that building is. That's not where this is. I wanted it to be true and authentic and have it, you know, show off all the gorgeous architecture and all the and a few of the weird little, you know, nooks and crannies that St. Louis has to offer.
It's always nice when you can throw in those little Easter eggs there. You know, just the things that won't really matter, except for the people where it will matter a ton.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's a page in, I think, the second issue where I show off there's a little park, just a little park next to Forest Park, which is featured in the series, and it's called Turtle Park, and there are big statues of just weird looking turtles there, and anybody from St. Louis knows where that is, but anybody outside of it looking at it would find that one a little oddball probably, but I was happy to be able to throw something like that in there.
I've read other stuff from Jim, so the fact that it includes Turtle Park is not going to surprise me at all. Although I'm also going to think he's just making it up. So one thing I'm kind of excited about, too, is having another Christmas time ghost story, because that's just something I feel like we've gotten away from as a society. So how excited are you to get to maybe join in with somebody's Christmas time traditions?
Yeah, I'm excited to be able to add this story to the pop culture ghost story Christmas mythos. You know, instead of another iteration of the Christmas Carol, this one is a Christmas ghost story, but it doesn't feature a miserly old man who has a change of heart or anything like that.
Okay, so what is your favorite version of a Christmas Carol then?
I was going to ask you the same thing. I think probably the Patrick Stewart, like, made-for-TV one. That has a special place in my heart. The Muppet Christmas Carol also has a special place in my heart. I really like the Guy Pearce version that came out 2019, I want to say, a few years ago. It was surprisingly dark and refreshing and wasn't similar to any of the iterations I'd seen before, and it was kind of nice to see something different done with it, and I really enjoyed that one. How about you?
I haven't seen that one, but as far as the other two that you named, I also have to add to the list Mickey's Christmas Carol is just a complete classic.
Yeah, that's a good one. There are
nice
lots to choose from. True.
I'm assuming that you're not going to hand this to small children for Christmas Eve reading, though.
No, I think it's probably best not to scar the small children. they should probably stick to the Mickey's Christmas Carol before they get to this one a few years later.
So if you want to scar the small children, this is a good one to give them. Okay, I like that.
Yeah. If you're into torture, if you're into, you know, just leaving lasting damage, psychological, emotional damage, just give them something that'll scare them. You know, there are kids in here with no skin. There are, like we said, you know, ghosts. There are witches. There are people behaving badly. So, yeah, this is not suitable for children. And maybe some sensitive adults.
If you feel like you're allowed to tell me, who is your favorite character, just from an artistic point of view?
You know, I think I like drawing Aunt Tiana best. It didn't take long to get her down, like to know what she was going to look like every time I drew her, and to not have to look at, you know, my reference designs, my reference drawings. You know, animators always have their series Bible, so kind of got the same kind of thing where I go back and look and like make sure that my characters look like how they were originally depicted all through the series. And her, it didn't take me long, and I could just draw her from memory. And she's one of the more animated characters, so it's always kind of fun to draw her, and some of her expressions, some of her no nonsense facial expressions, and you know, her incredulous, disappointed in her son, like looks kind of things. I probably enjoy drawing her the most.
How often are issues going to be coming out?
So the first one comes out in November, and then December, January, and February. I believe the trade is coming in April. So it's November, December, January, February, and then I think the trade paperback will be April.
Good, so I can get a nice little taste of it for Christmas this year and then be completely ready for Christmas next year.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll make a great Christmas gift.
Or a horrible one, depending on who you're giving it to.
True.
I would prefer to give it to somebody who's going to enjoy it, though.
I would also prefer that. I like when people enjoy my work, and I'm sure the rest of the guys do, too.
I will tell you right now, I will not be giving this to my wife. But she's
not a fan of horror?
She can't handle the horror stuff. The bits of violence, even just in the preview pages you have here, too much for her. I didn't even show her those. I know better than that at this point. But she's also the kind of person that would see it and like keep looking at it because she knows why I'm looking at it, and try to point out artistic things because she's a bit more art ability having than I am. And then she wouldn't sleep for 3 days.
So I guess you don't partake in like a horror movie marathon for the October for Halloween.
No, we've got to be so selective about it. Like, she was worried about Werewolf by Night.
Yeah, I still need to see that. I've heard good things.
Yes, you do. It's good. I definitely would say it's on the much tamer side.
Yeah, I think we watched Teeth, I think is the last thing we watched for our horror movie marathon. We haven't gotten through that many this year because we've both been just so busy. But we've been doing our annual rewatch of Over the Garden Wall. And then we've seen a few, Teeth, Jennifer's Body. We watched Bedazzled. That's tangentially related.
Eventually we'll get around to watching Nightmare Before Christmas. I don't care what any listeners say, it's a year-round movie.
I mean, it does feature all the holidays, so you can fit that in at any time.
Plus, it's just really good. So, what are you going to do? Tell me I'm not allowed to watch a good movie?
If it's a good movie, it can be watched at any time.
How does your work here on the Atonement Bell compare to what you're doing for the Unforgiven?
For the Atonement Bell, all of this is based in, like I mentioned, St. Louis, so it's based in real life. The Unforgiven is a dystopian story. It's based in a post-apocalyptic world. A lot of that's got to get built from the ground up and then in some cases destroyed since, you know, being post-apocalyptic. So for the St. Louis based, you know, Atonement Bell, I went around and I took a lot of reference photos of real life locations to make sure I got everything accurately depicted. There's a lot of scenes in North St. Louis. There's quite a few pages that are in the St. Louis Public Library, which the architecture in there is just really elaborate and gorgeous. And there's a lot of detail on those pages that to get right. So in some ways, the Atonement Bell is not just because of deadlines, more labor intensive than what I'm used to on The Unforgiven, even though I'm doing everything on The Unforgiven, and mercifully I have someone else had written this, you know, Jim had written this, and Ben takes the burden of colors off of me, and Ed takes off the burden of lettering, so I don't, you know, have those duties to handle. But it's the actual art itself is a bit more labor intensive than some of it on The Unforgiven. And there's another aspect of it in that I am the only person on The Unforgiven, so everything I've written in my scripts, you know, my scripts are maybe like 6 to 10 pages, and Jim's scripts are, you know, each page is fully detailed out, so it's a 24-page issue, it's a 24-page script, you know, and it's, I'm having to, and that's because I'm having to translate what is in Jim's head and what Jim's written down into, like, I have to interpret that in my head and then translate it to the page, whereas in my scripts, there's a whole lot of information that's not on those, so anybody who if I died, were to, like, take over that or something, they wouldn't know what they were looking at, because a lot of it's just in my head, and as I'm writing it, I know what it's going to look like when I get to the page. Whereas with the Atonement Bell, I'm having to translate what's in somebody else's head, and that's a new aspect that I hadn't encountered before, and it's definitely a different challenge than I'm used to. And then along with that, I also have to make sure that all of my art is clear for Ben for colors. I have to, you know, make sure that everything I've drawn is intelligible, so that he knows, you know, what it is he's looking at by the time he gets to coloring it. Whereas for, you know, something like The Unforgiven, I might leave my inks a little more spare, because I'll think, well, I'll go in with like a dark gray or something like that instead of a black in this area, or, you know, something like that. And so my inks have to be a little more descriptive when I'm giving somebody else something to work on, rather than just giving myself a future challenge to interpret when I do colors.
If you did somehow die before The Unforgiven was done, or at least before you were ready for it to have a maybe not good ending, but acceptable ending, would you rather have your ghost possess somebody else and have them finish it, or would you come back and finish it as your ghost self?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Because I don't know if does possession translate to, I feel like if I'm a ghost at that point, I'm just gonna be like, man, I'm tired, I need to rest, I don't want to do anything else anymore. I've earned my rest. But given, you know, ghost rules, I would probably be restless having not finished something. So would I rather possess someone, or I guess just given that I probably, knowing myself, couldn't trust anybody else to know what was going on with my work, I would possess somebody else to handle it. And but then they would get all of the praise and everything, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's the kicker there.
That is the kicker. That's true. Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that. Let's hope I don't have to find out. Let's hope I just finish it within my lifetime.
You're the one in charge of that. Just make sure you don't die and work fast enough to get it done.
I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best.
I'm glad to hear that.
There's like 18 issues out now, and the third volume of the series comes out next month. So that's been a few years in the making, and I'm excited to finally have that one under my belt. I've been having the feels like the sword of Damocles over my head, trying to get that third volume out, but I'm thankful that I can now just focus on Atonement Bell for the rest of the year, and I don't have that to work on too, because having to juggle both at the same time is absolutely exhausting.
How do you take the time to juggle doing both? Because I know with writers, like, you don't necessarily have to sit there as long to do it, and you can kind of like get the story written in your head as you're driving, but I'm assuming you can't draw art while you're driving.
No, definitely not. The artwork, like some of the inking I can do while I'm watching movies or things like that, so I can multitask with the inking because I've already been descriptive enough with my pencils to be kind to myself to multitask and do the inking kind of on autopilot a lot of the time. But the pencils, I've got to absolutely focus. I can't do anything else when I'm doing the pencils. I can maybe listen to audiobooks, but even sometimes that's too much. So most of the time with pencils, it's just music. And I'm easily distractible. So it's, you know, I work pretty much from 8 a.m. to 7:30 in the evening or so. It's 12-hour days most of the time for the days I am able to work on it. And then so the schedule I've been keeping for this year was pretty brutal, like 84 to 100-hour weeks. You know, I'd work on Atonement Bell Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, have my day job Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, get my Unforgiven work done. And now that that's done for the year, fortunately, I can just focus entirely on Atonement Bell and actually give myself a break before I, you know, on like, and actually give myself Saturdays again so I don't fall apart, because, boy, my wrists are killing me. You know, I'm open. I'm not, like, developing, like, carpal tunnel or anything like that, but you got to make time for rest. And when I find when I do rest, I get more work done more efficiently, and better work done after I've had some time to rest. But unfortunately, that's, you can't always have that. Deadlines looming. But I'm doing my best now to get this pumped out. I've all just got the one issue left, so really in the home stretch.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading this entire thing, seeing what you were able to do with the art on it, and finding some select few pages that I can actually show Kaylee that won't give her nightmares, because I don't want to deal with that at night.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's some in there that you can show her.
Hey, look, he drew horses. Don't turn the page.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. That's pretty accurate.
It has been great talking to you about all of this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
They can find me at tylerbruff.com, at tylerbruff on Instagram and Twitter, tbr_unforgiven on Instagram and Twitter, radio_Jimbo on Instagram for Jim, and Atonement Bell for the Atonement Bell on Instagram. And there's also a Twitter for Atonement Bell. Jim is just Jim Ousley, O-U-S-L-E-Y on Twitter. And then of course Red 5. You can follow all Red 5 stuff to get updates about Atonement Bell as well.
And as always, we will have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, because clicking links is so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
Oh, absolutely.
As always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast. But because Twitter seems to be trying to burn itself to the ground, you can always find all the social media links and everything over at PlayComics.com. If you want to help support the show, you can just gently place it next to your friend's ear. Give their ear holes a break. Put it close so that they can put it in their ear holes themselves. But don't force it in there, because forcing things into people's ear holes is just not fun. Or, you know, you can always help the show financially. That's cool, too. Don't forget that Play Comics is a part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to a bunch of other wonderfully geeky shows, including Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., which still has not made me edit, which still makes me very happy. I love everybody over there. It's so much fun. If you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character.